going to deal with anxiety. I'd like you to look at this picture. I personally like Charlie Brown the best. My anxieties have anxiety. Can you tell me, please, what you get anxious about? What do you worry about? What engulfs and eats up at your spirit and keeps you from enjoying life to the full because it keeps you on edge? It's something that takes a disproportionate amount of your energy. Tell me what some of those things have been or are. Get anxious about.
Going to the
dentist. That is true. A lot of people get very anxious about going to the dentist.
Facing major surgery.
Finances.
Work
deadlines. Things your son is going to bring for somebody else. When somebody's mad at you or doesn't like you. Things that you get anxious about.
Doing the taxes.
Doing the
taxes.
Taxes. Failure. Good. Things that produce anxiety for you.
College students.
College students. Come on, Max. Worried moms. Come on, you're not. Things that make you anxious. Going through a divorce. Yeah, that's a big one. Come on. Things that cause you extreme apprehension or unease or things that make you very nervous or give you fretful fits of fear.
My old car.
An old car that's going to break down, right? All the horrible stuff that happens in the world.
That's my car.
Your car? Making appointments.
Flying.
Waiting for medical test results.
People judging me.
People judging you.
Enough time.
Enough time.
Dying.
Making the right decisions that will affect a child's future.
Making the kind of right decision that will affect a child's future.
Finding a job.
Finding a job.
Political
candidate. Political candidate. What brings you anxiety? What brings you anxiety?
Balancing work and home.
Yeah, these are really good.
Things we don't feel we have control over.
Things we don't feel we have control over.
Illness in the family.
Illness in the family.
People not caring enough to change
bad habits.
Child rearing.
Not being enough for so many people.
Not being enough for so many people and their demands on you. Being alone in old age. This is just like a smattering, right, of the kinds of things that make us anxious. I would like to take us and look at Jesus, who is addressing anxiety, but I want you to know what's right before it, because he's addressing it in the context of something else. This is 9 slides. It's a big text. So I'm going to come out here to read it with you, because I want some emphasis on a couple of words. Here we go. Let's read this together, please. No one can serve 2 masters. If you try, you will wind up loving the first master and hating the second, or vice versa. People try to serve both God and money, but you can't. You must choose one or the other. Here is the bottom line. Do not worry about your life. Don't worry about what you will eat or what you will drink. Don't worry about how you clothe your body. Living is about more than merely eating, and the body is about more than dressing up. Look at the birds in the sky. They do not store food for winter. They don't plant gardens. They do not sow or reap, and yet they are always fed because your heavenly Father feeds them. And you are even more precious to him than a beautiful bird. If he looks after them, of course he will look after you. Worrying does not do any good. Who here can claim to add even an hour to his life by worrying? Nor should you worry about clothes. Consider the lilies of the field and how they grow. They do not work or weave or sew, and yet their garments are
in his most regal garb was not as lovely as these lilies. And think about grassy fields. The grasses are here now, but they will be dead by winter. And yet God adorns them so radiantly. How much more will he clothe you, you of little faith, you who have no trust? So do not consume yourself with questions. What will we eat? What will we drink? What will we wear? Outsiders make themselves frantic over such questions. They don't realize that your Heavenly Father knows exactly what you need. Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and then all these things will be given to you too. So do not worry about tomorrow. Let tomorrow worry about itself. Living faithfully is a large enough task for today. Whoa, big passage. This morning we head into a conversation about a topic that affects all of us. As a matter of fact, it is the number one mental health issue in the United States of America. And it affects some of us more than others. But we all feel anxious now and then. It's a common emotion. Many people feel nervous when they're faced with a problem at work, or before taking a test, or making an important decision, for instance. But some people end up serving their anxiety instead of their anxiety serving them. An estimated 40 million adults. Now, our population has 242 million adults in the United States, over 18. That means, this is kind of overwhelming to me, that about 2 out of 5 people, anxiety affects them in debilitating ways. So this topic today that we're talking about, we're really going to spend some time to delve into it. Because these many people, 40 million, suffer anxiety disorders. Their anxiety causes them such distress that it interferes with their capacity to lead a normal life. And that would mean that for every row of you in this room, if there's an average of 5 in a row, 2 of you are struggling with anxiety to this degree. So this is what I would like you to do. Ask yourself, is your anxiety, when you feel anxious, when you feel fear, when you feel this tightening, is it characterized by feelings of worry and fear that are strong enough that they interfere with your daily activities? Are they out of proportion to the impact of the event? Are you unable to set aside your worry and put it in perspective? And this is what I'd like to do, is take a look with you at the 12 signs that suggests that if this is true, you may have an anxiety disorder. Excessive worry. Sleep problems. Irrational fears. Muscle tension. Chronic indigestion, like irritable bowel syndrome, for instance, would be an example. Stage fright, fear of public speaking. You know, it's like when I write to you and ask you if you'll be one of the people that share, and you write back and say, there is no way until heaven comes. So that's what it's talking about. Self-consciousness. Panic, like panic attacks, as in. Flashbacks, like post-traumatic stress disorder. Perfectionism, like OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. Now, what's really funny, go back to OCD, what's really, really funny is the name tags have looked like, you know, when you come in, they're just, they've been hanging all out and everything. And today, I rearranged them in good OCD fashion. So please note on your way out that all the name tags are lined up in perfect OCD fashion. Compulsive behaviors, in other words, it's not just done, you have to go back and check it. Or you think you turned off the stove, but you drive back to, from the office to make sure that you turned off the stove. Okay. Self-doubt. Okay. I want to start. These are
some of its extremes. I want to start by asking, what are some of the positive aspects of anxiety? So anxiety is a human emotion. And all human emotions, I'm going to keep saying this again and again and again and again, emotions in and of themselves are not good or bad. Don't put a judgment on the emotion in and of itself. It is a warning sign, if it's a negative emotion, that something is not right, and it's warning you, and it's giving you a heads up. If it's something good, like an emotion like joy or elation, it's telling you something is grand, right? So it's not bad in and of itself. So to shame our emotion for existing is to take away God's warning signal to you, okay? So anxiety has some positive attributes. Talk to me about something positive in anxiety. Let me give you an example. If I am out late at night in the middle of the city by myself, I should feel anxious. Why? It's an indicator that I'm doing something stupid. I'm in the middle of a city by myself asking for trouble, right? So that's when anxiety has a good positive effect. Give me positives of anxiety. When you have to take a test, you're feeling a little anxious, and that's a warning signal to you. This is important. This is an indicator. Study. Prepare. Ready? Okay?
When you're driving in poor road conditions.
When you're driving in poor road conditions and you kind of feel your shoulders tense up a little bit, because your brain's telling you what? Slow down. Be careful. Take provisions because the roads are icy. Give me another illustration of positive anxiety.
I think it just makes you more aware of the situation you're in. It brings you to the forefront so you are aware of what's actually going on.
It can make you more aware of a situation, and you need to kind of pay attention to it as that indicator light.
It could be an agent for change.
It could be an agent for change. For instance, I'm trying to think of, like, my anxiety is telling me I shouldn't be here, and I have to listen to it because maybe I shouldn't be here, and I need to change that. Okay,
anxious comes from the same kind of root, and I mean, there are times where I'm anxious to do something, excited to do it, though, I say to my kids, if you're not a little bit anxious, meaning a little bit worried about it, it may not be worth doing. And I think anxiety has, I'm anxious to do it, but I'm just a little bit nervous even to do it.
Okay, so you're going on that roller coaster for the first time, right? It's a big step, and you want to do it, and you're a little anxious. It's telling you, yeah, this is new. This is something you haven't experienced before. You're anxious the day of your wedding, right? Because you want it to go well. You put a lot of preparation and planning into it. Somebody else, positive of anxiety.
I think you point out when your spirit and mind are not resonating.
When your spirit and mind are not resonating with one another, sometimes anxiety is what points to this clash that's taking place. Anybody else? Yeah, time for reevaluation. Sometimes our anxiety is telling us, reflect, look, take some time, maybe you shouldn't be doing this. Absolutely. So, anxiety can help us get out of harm's way. It can prepare us for important events. It can warn us when we need to take action. And we need to sort of honor this feeling within us because our body is trying to tell us something. It's the integration of our mind and our heart and our spirit and our body. And whenever they're trying to integrate, this is a good thing, right? We don't want to keep separating out these different parts of our existence. So they should be attended to. This anxiety should be attended to because how we act upon, how we resolve, how we deal with this anxiety makes all the difference. If it takes us to negative places, like the scripture was talking about, it becomes destructive. However, if we use it as a warning sign that we need to do something, prepare for something, think more deeply about something, take extra precautions, it's actually served us well. So does this first thing make sense about anxiety to everybody? So anxiety not attended to in constructive ways can lead to problems. More anxiety that affects us negatively and those we live with, for instance. It often requires or causes us to adapt to the anxiety of the person that we might live with. It might cause us to have additional issues like panic attacks or irritable bowel syndrome, because we're not addressing our anxiety, more things begin to happen as a result. So there's many ways to address our anxiety that are productive, and then there's other ways to not address or to address it that can actually hurt and harm. The most important thing to suggest is this. If you are anxious, if you're the person suffering from anxiety, or you're the friend or spouse or parent or child of somebody who is struggling with anxiety, here's the number one thing I want you to walk away from. Do not tell the anxious person not to be anxious. By telling an anxious person not to be anxious, what have you just done? Do they know anymore? You have just increased their anxiety. Okay? To give you another kind of comparison to that, when I work with people who are depressed, the last thing you say to a depressive is, why are you so depressed? Just get out of bed, pull yourself up by the bootstraps, and face your day. Do you think that the person who's depressed doesn't want to be able to do that? The problem is they can't. There's a chemical imbalance or whatever that's keeping situational depression, whatever it is keeping them from doing it. The person who is anxious, when you say to them, quit being anxious, all you're doing is adding on to their what? Their anxiety and their guilt and their shame and all that's already going on inside of them. Does this make sense? Okay, so Jesus, it's interesting what he does. He talks about nobody can serve two masters, right? Nobody can serve money and fill in the blank. And he goes directly from that to talking about anxiety that comes from the things that money can or can't buy. What's fascinating is then what follows. Let's read it together. If you judge other people, then you will find that you too are being judged. Indeed, you will be judged by the very standards to which you hold other people. Why is it that you see the dust in your brother's or sister's eye, but you can't see what is in your own eye? Don't ignore the wooden plank in your eye while you criticize the speck of sawdust in your brother's eyelashes. That type of criticism and judgment is a sham. Remove the plank from your own eye, and then perhaps you will be able to see clearly how to help your brother. I think what Jesus is attempting to say is, pointing out the other's issue is not helpful. Let them address their issue, and you focus on yours. And by picking our propensity to serve money and appearance and food and drink, he pretty well covers something that every single person struggles with. I happen to know a lot of people who struggle with anxiety. A lot of people come in to talk with me about their struggles with anxiety. And here's what I've learned along the way. If you struggle with anxiety, or someone you love struggles with anxiety, I would suggest that you encourage yourself or the other to become friends with the anxiety. What do I mean by that? Most often, when a person is feeling anxious, what they do is they want the anxiety to go away, so they try to push it away. And the harder we push anxiety away, interestingly, what happens is the stronger it comes out. I've chatted with some therapists about this, and I've done a lot of research on this, and we actually find that when we can make friends with the anxiety, we have a much better shot at overcoming it. What do I mean by making friends with it? Don't treat it as the enemy. Treat it as a warning sign from God that something deeper needs to be addressed, and go hunting. So, for instance, if you can address your anxiety with this, remember this phrase when you go, non-judgmental positive regard. If you can address your anxiety with non-judgmental, meaning unconditional positive regard, that you don't have to look at it and make it evil, but you can look at it and say to it, yes, I'm anxious. I'm very anxious right now about blank. And I mean, if I can deal with it in the moment, I deal with it in the moment. If I can't deal with it in the moment, I say, yes, I acknowledge that you exist and that I'm very anxious about this, but I am going to come over here and function, and then I'm going to come back here and deal with you. Now let's go through a little bit of an example, if we could. Say I, last night, became very anxious about the message this morning. And I can feel my heart racing, and I can feel like, oh man, I can't get this together, I can't put the thoughts on coming to me, and I start to get anxious because it's closer and closer to the deadline. Now I have to tell you, I used to wait until Saturday nights to write messages when I first went into ministry. And Bob said to me, if you're going to live with me, you're not going to keep waiting until Saturday night to do this. Because he would become anxious for me. I wasn't anxious. I knew something would come. But he was like, I can't stand this. You know, I'm going to bed, and you don't have a word on paper what you're going to do tomorrow. I'm like a mess. Like, he would be the mess for me. And he would say, you know, you have to honor me and not wait till Saturday night to do this. So I don't wait. But say it is Saturday night, it's 4 a.m., and I don't know what I'm going to talk about, you know, in a couple of hours, and anxiety starts to come in. If I can take that anxiety and I can say for a moment, wow, I am really feeling anxious, here's the question you need to ask. Why am I feeling anxious? Now, say I say, well, I've worked really hard on this, and I've given it a lot of energy, but it's just not coming, and it's almost time. Well, why does that make you anxious? Because it's my job to have a message on a Sunday morning. And what if I get up and I have no message on a Sunday morning? I might lose my job. And why does that make you anxious? Well, because I like my job and I don't want to lose my job. That's why it makes me anxious. Well, what could you do differently next time, Sue? Well, maybe I should wait till Saturday night to write this message, right? But here I am. It's 4 o'clock in the morning, and I don't have it, right? And now my anxiety is getting in the way. How do I become friends with my anxiety? So I can pray, and I can say, God, I really am not sure what I'm going to say. Now, I've gotten this place in messages many times where I haven't known what to say. And I say, I don't know what to say, and I just stop. And I just be still, and I breathe. Focus. And interestingly, what would often come to me in a moment like that is, Sue, why don't you talk about what just happened? It's a perfect illustration of anxiety, what's happening right now. Why don't you just share with the gathering your anxiety at not being able to do this and use it as an illustration of the very thing you're trying to teach? How else can I become present? I get some distance. I breathe. Pray, and I say, I need to set you aside here for a second, because I really need to focus. It's only a couple of hours away. What happens if I'm still anxious, and I come in here, and it's 10 o'clock, and I don't have a thing to say? Wait a minute. I ask you questions, and you talk.
So to humanity, that it happens all the time.
What if I just said, I have nothing, I gotta tell you, I was here to talk about anxiety. My anxiety got the best of me. And I'm like frozen up. What does that risk?
Vulnerability.
Judgment. What else does it risk? My job? Failure?
Rejection?
Losing members? I'm getting more anxious on that. What's interesting is that Jesus says what lies at the bottom of all of our anxiety is the fear that we're not loved. Isn't that interesting? That if I come up here and I'm vulnerable, and you reject me. Or you think, man, she doesn't ever act together, all those kind of things. But I fear that I'm going to receive from you a message that I'm not loved. And Jesus says, if we can keep reminding ourselves that we're loved, that's the best combat to anxiety. Because when something happens that causes us anxiety, if we keep asking the question, why? And why does that make me anxious? And why does that make me anxious? And why does that make me anxious? If you go back far enough, you will hit a nerve. And that nerve, 9 out of 10 times, will be some fear of rejection. Some fear that lies deep within you. Why do people get anxious about what they wear? Because they're afraid they're not going to fit in. Why do people get anxious about what they're going to eat? Because they're afraid they're going to die if they don't eat. Do we live in a culture where we can't eat? There's food everywhere. And if you don't have it, there's food banks everywhere. But we tell ourselves these things, and the greatest power that anxiety and fear has is that we don't name it and we don't go after it. Does that make sense? We don't name it and we don't go after it. And the fear just keeps expanding and expanding and expanding. I'm going to put you over here. I'm going to not judge you and thus judge myself as some kind of failure. And I'm going to treat you with positive regard that you are trying to teach me something. You are trying to break in. You are trying to help me understand a dynamic that is very confused and not integrated inside my being. So if you can receive the anxiety for just a moment, try to receive it not as the enemy, but as a friend, as a gift, non-judgmentally. Talk to the anxiety. What is making me so anxious about that? And really try to get in touch with it. You already are 1 foot ahead of the game as opposed to pushing it down. Does this make sense? Look at what Jesus says about this. Beneath our anxiety and judging lies a deeper problem. We do not realize how deeply we are. So I pray that you would walk away today with your, when you have your own anxiety or somebody else's, and that you would treat it with this non-judgmental regard, and that you would go after it. You would make friends with it. That you would help to understand it. That you would dare to share it with a friend and trust that they will treat, to pick the right friend, that they will treat it non-judgmentally with positive regard with you. So that rather than you become paralyzed by something that was meant to help you, you can become helped in a way that it leads you more to life, to the